show with Paul Daner, Mark Salafo. Kick off the weekend, all right. It's the Growler Friday show. It's Who Day Light.
All right, welcome into the latest episode of Who Day Light on the Growler. Paul Daner Jr. of The Athletic, Mark Salafo here with you. What's up, Mark?
What is going on? It's another great Friday.
It is. You know, it's NCAA Tournament Friday. It's about to be spring break for everybody Friday. This is one of the better ones. I mean, it's a top. It's an elite Friday today.
It's a little bit of a bummer that all the local teams are not doing anything in the tournament, you know, like especially with UK choking the way that they did. Mm-hmm. But it's also fun because you get that one day where like the Cinderella team gets to do all the press conferences and like, we're not a Cinderella. We're here to win more. And it's like, no, you're going to lose, Oakland. You're about to get stomped.
Although I am here for every Jack Oakie story that we could possibly get. Like that dude who only shoots threes and never passes is like he's just every, you know, every recreational baller's dream. The dude that you played with who just, you're just trying to get a little game in and get some run, enjoy it. And he won't pass. He just wants to shoot. You're not even a part of the team like that. He's a dream March Madness participant. I'm all about it.
Yeah, but I hate that his influence on all those rec games. If you're a rec basketball player, all of a sudden you've got this 6-foot white guy who thinks he's got the green light to start shucking like he did.
Yes.
Except they're not making their threes. They're hitting them off the top of the backboard. It's different when you're actually making those threes you chuck all the time.
Yeah, it is. But I appreciate the personification of the rec ball dream. And so good to see. Look forward to this weekend. It's going to be a blast. I'm on vacation for the beginning part of next week, but don't worry. Content's still coming your way. I recorded with Mike Renner, draft guru. We kind of going to lay the foundation for the Bengals draft. We're not doing deep dives. You know, this is kind of a little bit of a catch up for those of you that have not been really in the draft guru world. I mean, I know some of you guys are deep and you're going to laugh at this one. This isn't for you. Monday isn't for you. This is for those of you that are like, okay, the draft. Who's in the draft? When is that? If that's you, you're going to love Monday because we're going to take a specific look at the Bengals draft, the way it looks, the names to keep an eye on, and the biggest parts of it with Mike.
This is the that's time, Monday. Though, right? Like, yeah. If you're yeah, oh, yeah, a we're in casual it fan, you don't need to get too much into the draft before free agency because that's going to change everything anyway, you know? And so now yes. If you're just parachuting in, it's draft season for you. Free agency is pretty much wrapped. Now it's time for you to clue in, learn about who these college guys are, who could make a difference, and all of the holes that the Bengals can't get filled in the draft.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's they have a bunch of interesting decisions. Mike and I go through that. That'll be up Monday morning. Jay and I'll be back. It'll be Thursday morning next week once I get back. I'm going to be in between coming back off a 5-day vacation and then going to opening day. That is going to be a special low moment show for me. Like, I'm really excited about it, but we'll have plenty to talk about. Owners meetings are going on in the background. Ownership will have talked the day before. So Jay and I will dive into that stuff all that Thursday. And then we'll be back here with Who Day Light on Friday. Post opening day show as well. So it should be another big energy moment. I'm going to be really playing hurt next week is my point.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what that looks like. You know, I'm surprised. Obviously, we can't be the best football podcast if we're taking weeks off, like 3 weeks into the journey here. But yeah, I'm impressed with your dedication, working around the vacation. I'm surprised you're not going to try and fire up the recording on like the airplane Wi-Fi or something like that. Just try and record it with a guy next to you and
maybe
this class.
If I meet somebody interesting on the flight back, like, let's do it. Let's fire up the mics. I'll keep them with me.
Would you ever fly separate from your family, like leave them back in coach and take that first class seat for yourself? You know, if you've got the miles racked up, like, hey, sorry, I got that automatically upgraded. Sorry,
what am
honey.
I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? It's my seat now.
It's insulting if they offer you the upgrade and you don't take it. So sorry, honey, you take the kids.
I mean, I think that's the dream. I don't think I could actually pull that off. But I will be flying back next week. We'll get to all of the Bengals coverage. Plenty of it coming away. Of course, draft season is going to be intense. We got so much great draft stuff coming your way. Wednesday show, if you missed it, with Dan Pitcher. was awesome. Dan was so good. Came on and broke down Mike Gesicki, Zach Moss. We talked about Trent Brown, direction of the offense. Just fantastic. Much thanks to Dan for coming on. If you missed that, highly recommend listening. If you're not following us on YouTube, it was great for YouTube. Him going through some of the clips works both ways, but the YouTube stuff was particularly good. Go on over there, the Growler on YouTube. Subscribe. You can see Mark and I, you know, see our facial expressions, which really enhance the comedic experience, I feel.
You can see how much work we put into the backgrounds of our video setup. You know, some people just mail it in, and not us. We're committed.
Not at all. Very well.
Kids' artwork. And
yeah. No, it's very well positioned for you. I appreciate that. So we've got all that coming your way. Make sure you check it out. Make sure you're, if you have questions, we're going to, of course, our questions drive our Friday show. Send them over to the Growler Podcast @gmail.com. That's the perfect way for Mark to ambush me with them. The Growler Podcast on Instagram, mentioned YouTube, all of that stuff is up there. So rate, tell us we're great.
Yeah, we love hearing from all the people that love us and the haters too. Thanks for committing now to 4 weeks. You know, they're still out there, still pumping up the numbers, giving us the engagement. So we'll take your hate listens if that's what you're into. But yeah, we love the nice comments too.
I enjoy as a meme I saw this week. It was a, you know, the haters said I couldn't do it. And, you know, the haters are mostly right. I really couldn't, you know, I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of that going around this, especially with the NCAA tournament. There's a lot of like the haters said we couldn't, you know, no one believed in us. And then there's the guy that actually lost the first round. I was like, yeah, they were probably right. Not believing.
Yeah. Credit to the haters. They really called this one. Really? Yeah. We weren't the Cinderella this season.
Really weren't. We have a shout out.
Shout out to all of our new states listening. We've heard from people now in Washington, D.C., and Hawaii was a new one from Natasha. So shout out, Natasha.
Natasha B is an absolute legend, Mark. Now, she goes way back.
Legend.
Natasha B, yes. In the days of the Athletic Live Room, she would always be our show closer because it would be – we'd do them at noon usually, which was 6 o'clock Hawaii time, and she would go out – because we once requested this. She would go out to the beach – and put her phone up so we could hear the ocean because it was so soothing. And so she would do that and then and ask her question and wrap us up. Natasha is a absolute legend, always closed the show for us in the live rooms, and love that she's followed us over here to the Growler. So great to hear from Natasha.
I like how she set the bar for legend status. So I think we need more legend listeners. So if you live in a unique place, think about what you can bring to the show. And maybe we can incorporate that in some way down the line. We got new countries.
New countries this week.
Zimbabwe, Colombia, and Turks and Caicos. I mean, that's, you know, the big three right there, if you're asking me.
I mean, look, if we can get to 4 listens from Turks and Caicos, I think we do a live show.
I'm all for it. Because we're still, this is the growth period of the podcast. We're still courting all these advertisers, people that want to be in the Growler business. You know, if we're going to take our live show on the road, we've been thinking too small. If we're thinking like, hey, where are the Bengals fans? Let's go to this part of Cincinnati, that part of Cincinnati. We need to be spinning that globe and then finding the fans around the world. Let's do a Zimbabwe show.
I'm definitely going to start Turks and Caicos before I go Zimbabwe and Colombia. You know, I'm they're show. Wonderful countries, but I'm going to let's trial run it there before we go into Zimbabwe. All right. Just for now.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to pack up all this equipment and go to all these tropical locations, and then we'll do the Zimbabwe show.
Yeah.
And go from there. I know that we're big in Japan, right?
Yeah, we're huge.
So we huge could in Japan. Japan wouldn't be bad.
No, there's a lot of people there that could show up. I mean, I just assume lots of people show up just because people are just always showing up everywhere, just sheer density.
You know, yeah, but for the number one new football podcast in Japan, I'm sure that there would be a huge demand for a live show.
No question.
Are you ready to jump into Bengals Q&A?
Let's go. We got lots of good questions. Thanks, everybody, for sending questions in.
Yeah, we have gotten some terrific questions. The first one I love. Obviously, Trent Brown is the big signing on the offensive line, one of the two big holes that the Bengals had coming into free agency. So this question could Trent Brown actually be a better fit on the offensive line than Jonah Williams was just because of how good he is as a pass blocker, or is that just wishful Bengals fan thinking?
No, I think he's a better stylistic fit to what they're looking for. I think the reason they knew that Jonah wasn't going to really work here long term with a couple of different reasons. I think Jonah wanted to leave and wanted a fresh start elsewhere. But second of all, they're looking for bigger. They're looking for bigger, longer, stronger, more people movie tackles. I mean, that's apparent. We've never seen anyone really outside of, we did trace back, Jay and I traced back to the 2010 Vikings, are really the only other team to ever attempt an experiment like this of multiple 6'8", 340 plus tackles starting. Shout out Mount McKinney and Phil Lodeholt to the real diehards out there in Minnesota. But it's a very much like they're comfortable with that. They're comfortable with that size. That's the size and the power they feel like fits them, the anchor that can give them the pocket that they want, the type of downhill gap run scheme that they can do fits that. That's what they want. And so, yeah, I think he is a better stylistic fit. Is he going to be better? Is he going to play all 17 games? I wouldn't be betting on that. Is he going to be, you know, a great player? I wouldn't bet on that, but I think you can get somebody that's a really nice fit for the Bengals. And that's really what's probably fits them most with this move is that this is the type of team that they want to play like, they want to look like, and hoping that, you know, a change of scenery for Trent Brown, who seemed very beaten down by the New England experience, not hiding that, given the old, like, I don't want to talk about that. You know, I don't want to talk about what happened there. But then letting it out later, like, it was not good. Everyone was looking to get the hell out of that place as soon as possible, which is the opposite of what we've kind of heard in Cincinnati. I think all of that, the Ted Karras effect, right? Like, he knows Ted. Ted's in the tub. He's hanging out on March 19th saying, what's up? Like, I'm here. I think Ted's going to take some ownership over getting the most out of Trent Brown, and that can go a long way. And so I just feel like all of that makes him a better fit for this team and what they're trying to do. Yeah, I think that's the case. But, you know, the history is there, whether it's injury, whether it's questions on motivation, whether it's weight, those have followed him. And so we'll see if that continues here and it turns in. Is it Cordy Glenn or is it Orlando Brown? Like, which side are you going to get? You know, you hope that you get the Orlando Brown and you don't get the unmotivated, I'm not playing Cordy Glenn sitch.
What was fun is listening to Trent Brown when he was talking about the Patriots, because it did sound like he was a Boeing executive, you know, just, I don't want to talk about the plane falling apart. I'm focused on the future when the planes land without falling apart. You know, that's what we want to talk about.
Yeah. You know, I like to work at a place where we tighten the nuts and bolts, and that's going to be a different thing for me. You know, I'm really excited for that. To care about the work that way. Let's not worry about what happened there. Yeah.
What's confusing to me, though, is like, so he's a good stylistic fit for the Bengals. He's a huge guy. He's kind of what they want. And I can talk myself into him being a better fit than Jonah. And like, yeah, offensive line is going to be better than it was even last year when they stayed, if they can stay healthy. Not the Bengals' first pick, though. They brought Becton in first. Becton got the Burrow dinner treatment. Should that concern Bengals fans that he was like the second pick?
It's a great question, but I think they, you know, they wanted to bring those guys in specifically to get a better feel for them. You know, I think they had questions that they wanted answered of those guys, Tart and Becton. We talked about that a little bit, especially on Monday's show and some last week. But, and so that bringing them in, yeah, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean it was their first choice. And also, you know, once they shifted, I think Becton was going to be cheap in their minds. And the numbers aren't even out on Trent Brown yet. So I'm not going to speculate on what the difference would have been. But I will say that the belief is that Becton would have been probably significantly cheaper than Trent Brown. And when they shifted away from the defensive tackle as well, you know, when they said, look, Tart, it's just not, this isn't it for us. Okay. We're not going to do this. And the defensive tackle market, we just hate it. We don't like it. We don't think it's any of this money is worth it right now. When they did that, that money kind of freed up to go the next level up that maybe they were like, well, we don't know if we want to go all the way up to what Trent Brown maybe will cost. And again, like I said, those numbers aren't out, so we don't know that for sure yet. But that was the impression that I got, was that shift was like, okay, let's go back to maybe the better tackle that we really want here and invest in that. And I still think they could possibly do both. I'm not ruling that out in the long run if the draft doesn't fall their way, that Becton maybe still ends up here and you could still find a veteran defensive tackle that does end up being worth a flyer on. But I think that was why. I don't think it was necessarily a 1-2. I think it was they wanted to start by talking to that guy. And then you're like, you know what? Maybe we do shift. And again, I think Ted helped that. They talked to Ted and he talked to Trent Brown, and both sides through him, I think, realized this could be a better fit than they maybe originally thought. And they're willing to ride with that a little bit. So I think that was part of it too.
Yeah. I guess the money part will be interesting to see, because if Becton and Tartt are both going to be cheaper, yeah, I can see why then you trot out Joe Burrow for the big dinner. Did Trent Brown even get the big Joe Burrow dinner? I didn't even see if he was in town.
I did not see that. I did not. He came in really late on Sunday and then was in Monday, and he was signed by noon and out the door. So I don't know that he was even here for dinner time. Now, he may have gotten the secret, even better, the secret cupcakes and crackers dinner at Burrow's house. That's the next level. See, people talk about being out in public. Burrow doesn't want to be out in public. The one he really, really likes, he brings you into the house. Now the new, like, multi-million dollar estate, okay? That's a way better run than a night at some steakhouse.
Yeah, he's upgraded his accommodation. So maybe he had, like, a secret, you know, donuts with Joe session with Trent, and that's what really got him over the top, you know, something like that. That's better. I don't want Joe to have to go out to a fancy steakhouse every time a free agent comes to town, you know? Like,
let's run pass or boot this. What would you rather, if you were an NFL free agent coming and considering Cincinnati, would you rather have donuts with Joe in, I don't know, let's say donuts with Joe, like, at the stadium, okay? Let's say in a suite, okay?
Sweet donuts.
Or good donuts, high-end donuts, okay? A combination of multiple places. We're talking, we've got Holtman's, we've got Krispy Kreme's, we've got Peace, Love, and Donuts sending some warms over. Okay, we've got all of it there, all laid out for you. Some coffee in a suite at the stadium, you and Joe Burrow. Or steak dinner at one of these fancy schmancy places. But you've got the coaches are there. It's Joe. It's maybe a couple other players. It's a bigger dinner. You're not getting the one-on-one treatment. Or are you just saying go to Joe's house, but you're only getting cupcakes and crackers and whatever, like, old, you know, stuff he has laying around his fridge, but you're at his house?
Yeah, I think that is easier than you think. I think you got to start with the steakhouse experience because you want to see the best food that the city has to offer, right? Like, I think now that Joe's upgraded his accommodations, that's almost insulting if you're in, like, this huge mansion and he's still just like, all right, well, let's see what crackers we have. Here's a pizza Lunchable that I have here. So maybe we could share.
There's a better chance than not that that's how Joe's living in the, like, multi-million dollar house, is just multi-million dollar house with just bachelor fridge, you know?
Gosh,
I feel like better chance than not.
Just the worst junk food and then, you know, the healthy food he has to eat. Mixed in with, like,
a bag of pizza rolls in the freezer. Look, we've all done it. Yeah,
the pizza rolls hit different when you're in a mansion, though, for sure. It doesn't feel as shameful.
Pizza rolls, the best. 2 a.m. mansion pizza rolls.
What's great about that, it doesn't matter how long you cook them, you will still absolutely burn the roof of your mouth. It doesn't matter if you undercook them, overcook them, they will scald you, and that is a meal that you will remember the next day.
What do you show? Although, you know, of course, he has the Jose Salazar personal chef that just brings over the good stuff all the time. You got to hope that there's a few during the week that Joe couldn't get to from, like, that Jose just had whipped up for him and Joe didn't get around to, that at least he could serve you, you know, like a nice Tupperware full of some delicious, you know, something from Mito's or something like that.
Yeah,
like, that
would be, why does this say Wednesday on it? That's, you know.
I'll take Jose Salazar 4 day old.
So what
I'll
are you gonna all day. And then I think you gotta put the donut session second, right? How do you rank them?
I want to see Joe Burrow's house. Like, if I'm coming in, I feel like that's a special gate. Like, anybody can go to the steakhouse. I'm hanging out with Frank Pollock. Okay, anybody can go there. Only some people get to see the house to get to go and get the real hang. Okay, so that's number one for me. I probably would do the steakhouse too, and the suite. But the suite and the donut smorgasbord. I'm not putting my nose up at. I like that too. I like that being in the building with him. So that's just me. That's my personal. So let's keep it.
The donuts.
Good tangent. Good tangent. Well, send us what your answers are. If you guys have some real serious thoughts about that question, send them to the Growler Podcast at Gmail.
So you brought up Ted Karras. We did have a question from Stan. He says, is Ted Karras the new Sean Casey for Cincinnati? Ted
he
had
might
a big
be surpassing.
Event.
He might be surpassing Sean Casey, who got the name the mayor. I'm here. If we got some, I think Ted, I like Tub Talks. Like, I kind of feel like this is me giving to Bengals content right now. After the whole comment about the tub and the idea of Ted in the tub, I think they need to do one of their like jungle shows that's strictly just Ted talking to people that walk by him in the tub. Like if you're an old SNL fan, you know, like the copier guy, like, hey, Mikey, getting in the tub, right? Like I want Ted just talking to people because he's so damn charismatic and engaging. And we've got this whole comical idea of hairy offensive lineman Ted hanging out with his arms out in one of the cold tubs. Like, this is what I want, Bengals content. This is what you need to be producing.
Yeah, I mean, you guys need to step it up. They do a great job, but
they do a great job, but I'm just here to give ideas.
Yeah, we're a very collaborative, creative team here at the Growler. You know, it's not just about our show and pushing all of our shows forward. We want to help everybody in the community. So the Bengals, they do a great job with their content, but you know, Tub Talks would be a huge one. I would love to see that show. I do think he's past Sean Casey too. I think you're right. Like, and the key is the merch. Sean Casey didn't have good merch. And, you know, the Cincy hat thing has really taken off. Great cause, you know, it helps that it supports a great cause, but having cool merch, that's a game changer. You know, that's going to last even longer than his career will. People will still be rocking those hats, you know, 5-10 years from now.
That will be a tough one whenever they have to move on from Ted. His contract's up at the end of this year. He's like the one guy that I'm like, look, I just think you guys got to make an exception to this whole older guys thing. Like, Ted is too important to the community. Cincinnati can't handle this, okay? Ted's got to stay. Do this for the city. Do you care about the city or not?
Right, yeah. If you get rid of him, you know, what's the city going to do when you want the new stadium? They're going to say, all right, if you're going to take away our Ted, then – you know, you're on your own to build your own stadium.
Bake that into the new stadium lease. Ted stays.
Lifetime
Ted has
contract.
To be staying on the roster for the duration of the lease. I want 55-year-old Ted forced to strap on a uniform, even if he's inactive on Sunday, and get out there. That's what we all are demanding this. You know, he'll just be wearing a Cincy hat jersey at that point. You know, it's like it's got the logo all over it in patches like NASCAR style.
Yeah, maybe you can just keep him on the roster, then elevate him to the coaching staff eventually. I'm disagreeing with you here. I don't want to see a 55-year-old Ted Karras in a
taking up a roster
uniform.
Spot. If that's what it takes to keep the Bengals in Cincinnati, I think you've got to do it.
You'll make that exception for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Tub Talks.
So we're both agreeing. Tub Talks is the way to go. And even though he still has Sean Casey beat, you know, Casey probably had more years before he got to that point too, you know, like Ted got there pretty quick to the point that he's
no
like up yours,
I mean,
Tennessee,
Sean was
like
here
that
for a
stuff.
While. Sean has better stories because nobody tells better stories than Sean Casey. That's just a fact of life. But everything else Ted's got on him.
Especially because he's on good teams right away too. That helps. Like if the teams still weren't great, then you're not going to stand out as much. Yeah. But the fact that he's embraced the city the way he has, the merch, you know, yelling at the Tennessee fans, giving some of that like pro wrestler presence on your offensive line. Yeah, that definitely catapults him a little bit above Sean Casey.
Love it.
All right, moving on to our next clip, or next question here. This is about your mock draft blurb that you did for the Athletic Writers Mock Draft earlier this week.
All seven rounders out now, by the way, too. That came out today. So we did the first rounder yesterday with everybody else, and I sort of kept that rolling and did the full 7-round 10 pick mock draft off of that first round that is out now for you to go and check out. It's like kind of the first real one post free agency. So just shouting that out right now, personal, very selfish plug for the Athletic to make sure you're going and go check that out. It's all out there now.
But that was just you, right? That wasn't like all the writers doing a
that is just me. The first round was everybody picking for their team, and I had one blurb in it. I just pulled that pick into the first round for the Bengals and then did all 10.
So this reader is a little, you know, perplexed by your pick because you did go offensive line, which I think is probably the way they're going to end up having to go. But he said he would personally find it hard to pass up Byron Murphy as well. Are you making your pick with the offensive lineman based on what you think the Bengals will do? Or is that just like your opinion, you know? So basically, is that what you would do or what you just think the Bengals will do?
I appreciate it. I'm looking at this question here as you put it in here, and I believe, shout out Lebowski reference. Is that just like your opinion, man? Which I appreciate. I want to make sure we get proper Lebowski in there.
Yeah.
But I want to say this. I actually have a better movie reference to answer this question, and that's from Anchorman. And it's when Will Ferrell jumps into the bear pit. Like, here's the thing. When this was, we were doing this on Tuesday behind the scenes here, and it goes on our Slack channel. Everybody's coming in, making picks. I'm actually like looking at the clock. I got to go drive to Turfway Park Racing and Gaming to do the Mo from 3 to 4. And it's like getting closer to my pick. Trent Brown news hits right as I'm up, like right as I'm next up. And to the point that they asked me, wait, with the Brown news that happened 2 seconds ago, Paul, do you still want to pick Fuaga? And I was like, yes. Like I basically had to make that call in like 30 seconds. And so I am Anchorman. I am Will Ferrell, Ron Burgundy jumping into the bear pit. Yes. And then landing. And as I was driving to Turfway, I immediately regret this decision. Like I immediately regret this. I have been the king of the Byron Murphy is the pick club. He has been, you can't find game wrecking three techniques anywhere else. And I think you can make I was just so stunned to see Fuaga available. He's like the one to me. And I talk about this with Mike Renner about the ones for the Bengals, like out of the group of six, if we'll call them the power six, that exist at offensive tackle in this draft. Kind of looking at which ones best fit the Bengals. For me, he feels like maybe the best fit. And because of that, he might be the one that I would take over Murphy if Murphy was still available. Not counting like Joe Ault, who's going to be in the top 10. He's a left tackle and all that. I just think of the kind of group that is most likely to be there, that could be there. He's the one. So that made me stay. I'm staying with, I love the idea of protecting Burrow at all costs. I love the idea of matching him with Brown and now having insurance at both guard and tackle and having your tackle of the future and really building out the depth there better to make sure that you can have an offensive line that can survive. You just don't find game wrecking three techs anywhere but the first round. He's the only guy. If he's actually there, that would be an insanely difficult decision. It was, I still were having regrets. I could go either way. But I think it would be very hard for them to pass on Murphy, but I think that, you know, tackle certainly is just standing there for them. But if you're talking about the shift I talked about earlier, where they shift away from defensive tackle, that shift away and making a little extra for Trent Brown could be a shift towards Murphy in that situation. If they're starting to feel like maybe he'd be available, or maybe they have interest in Johnny Newton in that spot as well, or something like that. So
yeah, I was going to ask about Newton. Part of it. So you're just way Team Murphy over Team Newton. So let's say Murphy's off the board there. You're going Fuaga. You're not even entertaining Newton.
No, I'm not entertaining Newton. I'd go most of the tackles over him. Just, I think Murphy is more well-rounded and can do more things inside, is more versatile, which is what they really kind of cherish that with their defensive tackles. They want guys that can play multiple positions, move around, because Lou likes to do so many different things. Newton is more of a pure three technique, and that's what he does. And I don't know if the Bengals are going to view him in the same light as Murphy. He to me would be a trade back, and if Newton's there, would make sense, guy.
Yeah, I do think that makes sense. And, you know, it never hurts to go with an extremely talented offensive lineman, especially because, you know, using those high round picks, you're not going to get a lot of chances that late in the first round to get a player like Fuaga. If he is still on the board, you know, it's a great offensive line first round. But also, you know, my favorite part of that story is that all those other writers were giving you that that mea culpa chance. I don't know if that's a great sign either. If you make your pick and they're like, Paul, are you sure about this? Are you sure you don't want
it? Was strictly because they didn't know if I had seen. I mean, it happened simultaneously.
That's insulting too. Paul, are you there's news.
Are you on top of your beat? I was like, yes, I'm late to make my pick right now because I'm writing about it. Thank you very much. You actually could have put my tweet into the Slack because you used the original news and not my like thing that I had up afterwards talking about the confirmation of it. But that's fine. That's, you know, I don't want to air out dirty laundry.
I do like the Anchorman reference too, because Anchorman, you know, classic. That was a classic Will Ferrell stretch. And, you know, now these days with just how memes get thrown around anyway, but before, you know, we're going to tell our kids that before there were memes, we just had to shout Anchorman quotes all during college. That's just what it was.
I mean, that's just it for, you know, our demographic here on this show. You and I are very much from the same place and time, you know, and that was it. I mean, your college experience as a dude in a house of dudes. I don't know where you live, but I was in a house of, we had 10 dudes in this house, like two levels, five on each level, too many dudes, questionable stuff everywhere. All it was every day was just waking up to a different, what movie quotes are we throwing out today? And is it going to be the same ones as yesterday? Probably is the answer to that, but Yeah,
so my entire freshman year was just like Anchorman quotes and Chappelle Show, just the two. Like everybody.
The fact that Chappelle Show came out the time that I was in college was like one of the sweetest spots you could ever have, because God, just amazing stuff. All right,
moving along,
we'll try to get Dave Chappelle on the show on a future episode. We'll see if we.
Yeah, we should do that. Yeah, we're talking.
I would do a live from Yellow Springs with Dave. Let's go.
Yeah, we don't need to go to Japan and Turks and Caicos. We
can't. You work your connections? Can't you work your comedy connections up to Yellow Springs?
You know, we could. We'll see. I have worked with Dave before. I mean, he was. We did shows together in New York City back when I lived there. So I'm sure that's a very.
I want that story. What was that like? What was happening there?
So this was 2012, and this was the first time that I was doing a paid spot at a big New York comedy club. Right. So he was not even touring at the time. For me, it was like a career changing moment because I'm at this club on the Upper East Side, the Comics Trip Live. Jerry Seinfeld started in this room. You know, Chris Rock used to wait tables there. Eddie Murphy would perform there a lot. Adam Sandler did one of his more recent specials there. So this room has like a lot of history behind it. When I was there, you know, like a lot of the clubs, they have their high points, they have their low points, but it's been there since the mid 70s. So they were still doing okay. It was a huge night for me. I'm so psyched to be, you know, at a big New York club getting a paid spot. There were like 40 people there. It was a Monday night. Dave is not touring, right? So he's nowhere. He's still a ghost. He's not, you know, now he's selling out arenas. He's doing shows with Joe Rogan. He's doing his Yellow Spring stuff. So you can see Dave now. He's put out like a million specials. Back then it was rare. And he just decided he wanted to get on stage. He popped in unannounced to close out this show. And so in this tiny little green room was just me and Dave Chappelle hanging out for like 15-20 minutes.
Wow.
And he could not have been nicer. He just another comic introduced himself. Hey, I'm Dave. I'm like, oh yeah, I know that. You don't
I know you. Yeah.
I'm good there. Yeah. And even when they announced him, because this crowd had seen a good show, like a lot of the people on that show, you know, some of these people are now on SNL. Some of these people went on to The Daily Show or are huge standups now, or they're co-hosting the Growler podcast. You know, they've gone on to big things.
Right.
So they saw a good show. And then when the host was like, all right, now your next comedian, you might have seen him on the Chappelle Show, Dave Chappelle. And they all laughed. And then he came out and they started screaming like it was a Backstreet Boy. It was wild.
I mean, I cannot imagine going into some club on a Monday night and there's 40 people there. And just all of a sudden, they just announced Dave Chappelle. I mean, that is just, that's just insane. That's just
insane. And he's just chain smoking the entire time because he doesn't care. No one's going to enforce smoking rules on Dave Chappelle.
Are you going to tell him to leave? Like these people are like having their life dream come true right now. So,
and he did like 45 minutes. It was great. I still have the tape somewhere. Maybe we should air that like a special episode.
Absolutely.
Dave Chappelle, unreleased footage.
That is absolutely incredible. What a cool story. By the way, if you get a chance to go do the Yellow Springs show, highly recommend it. It's one of the coolest things. I did it once last year and it's such a unique experience. It's so fun. It's so organic. You never know what you're going to get. You can get a show where it rained on us the entire time, and Jon Stewart's just sitting on the front of the gazebo as we are all in ponchos getting poured on, and he's undercover looking at us, and he just stops, and there's a long pause, and he's just like, at what point does this become a problem? You know, that we're all just getting drenched. But it's like, because it's so different and it's so unique, and they're so good at playing off of all of that, and you never know who's going to show up. And so if you get a chance, I highly recommend here. Not that it needs any more promo, not that it needs any pub from our wide audience. I mean, look, Turks, people could be flying from Turks and Caicos to go see this show in Yellow Springs now. So you're welcome, Dave.
Yeah, if there's anybody from Zimbabwe, it's definitely Paul Daner Jr.
That we sent them, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You're welcome for that. So, but yeah, no.
He does have a comedy club now in Yellow Springs that he's slowly opening. So I don't know if that's going to replace the Cornfield shows, because that was a special thing. Yeah. And, you know, say what you will about Chappelle and how you feel about his latest material, or whether you like it, don't like it, whatever. The guy still, he put on live comedy shows almost quicker than anybody during a time when the pandemic was crushing entertainment. He brought a lot of work to people in Yellow Springs and kind of made that such a cool thing at a time when everybody really needed it. So,
you know, something I love almost more than anything about that was because it's back in the woods and you're separated out, and it's this little community of people that are here for this show sort of forms. There's food trucks and drinks and whatever. But you have to leave your phones at the front. And they hold them, and they're so it's literally a community of people for one night based around comedy hanging out in this place with no phones. And that was kind of awesome. Like, I wish we could just do that. Like, I want to have parties like that where you just everybody shows up and we all hang out for a night with no phones, because I just miss that. This is old man. We have an old man screams at cloud segment here, but like, there's something so awesome about that that would made it extra cool too. I thought to have that kind of feeling.
I feel like even restaurants should use the yonder bags. Like, there should be some that's their approach. Yeah. It's like, yeah, you surrender your phone, and if you need, you have to leave to go get your phone. I love that as a comedian. I wish I was at that level that I could do shows where I make people put their phones away. I've had to do shows where somebody takes a FaceTime call in the showroom. Like, that's how bad it gets sometimes, where they will answer like they're not in a live performance. Yeah, I'm just at the comedy club. I'm like, are we serious? I had to call that. I took that person's phone and then called that person back, and that became the next 10 minutes of the show. But
yeah,
that's the attitude you get. So I wish I was at that Chappelle level where I could make you surrender your phone.
I wish we were all at the Chappelle level. That's what I wish.
We're getting there.
Let's keep it rocking. Let's go. Let's go a little bit. We've gone enough far off track now, I think, that we can just get weird, right? Can we just let's do some weird stuff.
All right. Yeah. So we'll skip over some of the, more traditional questions then. This is from Stan. He is a fairly new fellow bald man. So he's curious, if you shave your head, should you use a wax or something to make it shiny? I bet you didn't think you're going to be giving physical appearance advice, especially after your statements last week. So.
Well, yeah, I assumed that this was actually going to turn into a shot on me. Like, what do you do so I can do the opposite? You know, I know I would never wax. I feel like, well, don't be too shiny. Is that wrong? Like, I don't know if you're a fellow bald out there and you have a strong opinion on this, let me know. But I don't want to be shiny. Like, I don't want it to look too shiny. I don't want to feel like there's a glare. I don't like the glare. It's just. Look, shave it, have it down, but I don't want to shine. I think waxing is too much. Don't go trying to make it shine. I think it needs to. You're already just going natural. I don't have the hair, and that's what it is. Let's not try to make it look like you're doing extra work to try to make it look some way. You're just taking on life's slings and arrows when you go bald and accept it. And that is where I think you get a little bit of your dignity back.
Yeah, if you're just taking it, you're just being humble about it. That's what I like about your approach then. I'm not a bald guy, but I'm very inspired by your, I don't need to add the shine. You just want to let your personality be your shine that you put out to the world. You don't need any fabricated stuff. Yeah. You don't need to intimidate people with your shiny bald head. So yeah, good. Maybe we should just have a segment now where you give advice to new bald people.
That's really all the advice that I have. That's really
that's the end. That's the end of the segment.
Just is one, accept it. Don't don't make it look like you're trying to make it work, because no one is going to be impressed by anything you do. So just make it look like you have just accepted life and moved on, and you're not trying to worry about it anymore.
When did it happen for you? Like, when did you finally make that move?
We're gonna go there.
Punt on this. We're there now. You're the one that's like, hey, I'm the bald expert. You're like, hey, you know what? Let's forget this, the T. Higgins question. Let's talk about my personal physical appearance. So,
if you want me to talk about T. Higgins, I'm happy to talk about T. Higgins. I mean, I don't know if people want to know your hair. If we were live right now, we could do a poll. T. Higgins or my weird baldness story. I'm guessing people probably want T. Higgins. I guess answer to the T. Higgins question would be, they could still trade him, but because you can't spend in free agency, because that's over, you would be taking on a player. There would be a player in picks involved if you're trading T. Higgins now, right now, because you do want to get that value on the current roster. So think of it that way. You had nothing to do with this $21 million you just freed up by trading T. Higgins. Okay, well, if you take on someone else's money, then maybe that's where it comes from. Think Derek Brown, Carolina, right? Like somebody like that who's on a franchise tag, who has a big salary himself. You're taking that on and maybe getting some picks or some sort of deal involved. That's my T. Higgins answer. More importantly, I went bald really early on and knew it was going to happen. And I went from the days of being big hair Paul in college to being bald Paul pretty quickly. And I didn't truly accept it until I was in my late 20s. And I was like, I'm just going to be done with it. Was thin. It was there. It wasn't like gone, but I was in my late 20s. I didn't want it to be obvious that I was thinning, and bald was popular enough. Bald was kind of becoming the new hair at that point. So it got shaved, and I've just kind of gone with it ever since. So don't be afraid. There's no age where you should feel uncomfortable just going with it. People will think.
Were you married?
I was not. I was very single. It was a problem.
Oh, wow. See, here I am thinking like, oh yeah, you just let it go because you were married in your late 20s. You're like, no, I need to impress.
That was my best path.
Wow. That's even more inspirational that you surrendered to that, went bald, and then things started working out for you. It's not like you had already locked down your future. You were like, well, who cares now?
As you get older, bald is more acceptable. And I had been comfortable doing it for 5 years. I had a one up on all the pre-balds that were just now figuring it out. They were understanding that, oh, wait, it looks like I'm working too hard. No, this guy's got it together. He's just accepted it. And there was a confidence in that. And
you that hit was, the trends early. You've got the old maybe. Soul. Yeah. Next question. This one comes from somebody who knows you're a big Survivor fan, obviously. So run, pass, or boot. Who makes it furthest on Survivor between Paul, Jay, and Mo? And this comes from Nick, who does say that he's a fellow baldy. And also has less than average physical appearance. I don't know if he needed to include that.
Less than average. I don't know if that was mentioned last week. I thought it was like, look, I know I'm not the most attractive. I know it was less than average. I was hoping that I was maybe average.
Average.
But now it's been confirmed that I am less than average.
So well, you opened the door, and now everyone else is like, oh yeah, you know, Paul, don't worry about it. I know that you look awful.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
We still
every
like
week
you.
It's like Paul gets patted on the back for not being attractive. That's great. No, I would say fair enough. I am not making Jay's definitely winning this. I mean, there is no doubt. Jay is like the nicest person. He has great social game and he knows how to work every single angle. He's the king of like lying his way down to the front of the concert. He's able to like figure out how you make this situation work. Like, he is the king of that. And so between being the nicest guy, great social game, works every angle, he's definitely a Survivor. I mean, he's going. Mo's not lasting. Mo's not even getting off the boat. Okay. Mo's turning right back around. This is not for me. Okay. I love the game. So I would get in, but I wouldn't be super at it. And I would just spend all my time just trying to talk to people and throw challenges because I didn't want to like do all of the hard stuff. And the moment they told me I had to dig on the beach, I would not. Because that looks absolutely awful. I saw a dude get thrown, basically kicked off the show. Medical had to get called twice because he had to dig too long. And I'm like, no digging for me. That looks like the worst. Just having to dig and then crawl under stuff. I'm uninterested. That's what would happen.
If you're not going to win the show, like it's good to at least tap early. And you're right. Mo would probably not even get out. He'd just treat that as like a free boat trip. That's it. You know,
yes.
He just gets to
ride. Shout out to the woman on Survivor this past week that didn't know how to jump as an adult. They were practicing jumping. Do you know how uninterested in physical activity in your life and how much you TV you watch for you to not know how to jump as an adult human? Like, not that you do it, but not know how to. They were trying to teach her, like, okay, you got to lift one leg and push with the other. That is unfathomable level of just you watch too much TV and you shouldn't be on this show.
Yeah, that doesn't even sound like a human person. It sounds like an alien that just showed up and they're like, oh yeah, here's how you use this body that you're inhabiting. Like, she couldn't jump? Like, that is what a nightmare. That should be a screener question before you're actually thrown onto this show. It's like, hey, show us how you can jump.
It's like the guy who didn't believe in space at the combine. It's like, when you walk in the door, do you believe in space? You say yes, come on in. Survivor screener, can you jump?
Can you jump one time?
We know digging is not. Just jump through the door, please. And if they do it, then you're allowed to come in and go to the next round.
Since we're already kind of off the track a little bit, this is a Twitter question that I liked. In your years of covering the Bengals, what is the silliest story that you were forced to cover?
Oh, well, silly, you know, silly kind of has a couple different meanings. I think silly, like, made me giggle, made me laugh the entire time. It was silly, like, this is, I can't believe I have to cover, frivolous, stupid, right?
Yeah. So both of those, how would you?
I think I have one for both. The silliest that made me laugh the whole time was when Marvin Lewis accidentally used the word midget, and that's not the proper language, on a radio show, and then had to apologize for it, but like the apology didn't include the little people community, and then had to like do, they had to do a little more research on how they need to address those that had issue with what was said. And it was about Johnny Manziel, which made it even funnier, and the whole thing. And then Cleveland sent down a little person, little John, not little John, big John and little something. It wasn't like, yeah, it was like somebody else. It was a John from a radio show who was a little person, came down and like sat in the front row. His little legs were like swinging under the chair, and he had his questions reading off his phone that had all kinds of like short languages in there. You know, like, oh, does he need to stand tall in the pocket, and does he fall a step short? Like, it was all this stuff in there, and Marv had to just kind of like grin and bear it, which the whole thing. And then he was like out at practice next to, if you know, local Cincinnati, Elise Jesse, who was at NBC at the time, does sports. She's very tall. And then this little person was like talking to her, and it was such a weird thing. It's like, of all people to approach, it was like the little guy and Elise were talking for like a half hour, and Adam Jones comes out while that's happening. Of course, again, the cast of characters is just too much here. It comes out and he's like, oh, y'all got jokes, like pointing at the two of them. And it's like, this has just gone so far. And then we got to watch Johnny Manziel's debut and everybody making fun of him that week. It was just one of those weeks that was too much, had me just laughing the entire time.
But you needed those weeks during the Marvin era, you know, like, helped change up some of the energy. And that's fun. I feel like in the Zach Taylor era, that whole story is not going to be as enjoyable, because there's actually good games that we want to pay attention to, and you don't want to get sidetracked with a, you know, midget gate or whatever Marvin had to deal with.
Yeah, people care more about the team now and less about...
So what's the second category of silly story you were forced to cover?
You know what? It has to be. I go, this is going to be a second Jack Brennan reference this week on the Growler. So Jack Brennan, Bengals PR for absolute legend, would have a line that I heard him use many, many times when someone would call down to PR about something related to Chad Johnson / Ocho Cinco tweeting something, right? And so the news organization calls, like, is this true about whatever Chad tweeted that day? Chad was a pioneer on Twitter and was doing what he does now, which is just silly stuff to keep him in the news all the time. And so Jack would say, the Cincinnati Bengals are not in the business of following Chad's tweets. And just that was the standard line. So so often you would just hear that line uttered from an office in the other room and always made me laugh. But there was something that we didn't have the ability to do. So sometimes it'd be like, okay, he's going to race a horse. Okay, he's going to be playing playing soccer somewhere. Like, is he going to go buy 1,000 Big Macs? What is he doing now? Like, and you have to, like, you always had to kind of follow. But the top of that was in 2010 when they had the T. Ocho show when Terrell Owens showed up. And this show was truly awful. Although, talk about Pioneer. Two football players talking about life might have been ahead of its time a little bit. Like, Kelce's before Kelce's. It just
wasn't. They could have made a ton of money.
Yeah.
If they did that now.
They were doing this. You know what he's doing with Shannon Sharpe on the Nightcap now is basically what he was doing with Terrell Owens at the time when they were playing. I mean, marketing visionary, but at the time it was awful. They would say something stupid and you had to watch to see if they like threw a teammate under the bus or said something that was so scandalous that you had to ask him about it. And it was like, I can't believe I'm having to watch the T. Ocho show on like whatever weird channel this is on. The E, it might have not even E, it was like E2 or something stupid. It drew like a 0.1 and then just kicked off the air. But
yeah, they didn't have any.
That's probably the silliest. All things Chad were frivolous, which is great, which is what makes him so lovable. That he was never like his humor, his attention seeking was never shock jock. It was never like saying, it was just being funny and silly. And
right.
But we had to deal with that.
But as a reporter, if you look at in the scope of that, there are definitely athletes' tweets that you would not want to cover, you know, because they're just like, imagine covering Kyrie Irving and he goes on his flat earth tangents. No. And oh, you got to do the research yourself. What do you want us to do? Just sail around the earth and hope that we come back? Are we supposed to go to space, Kyrie Irving? Like, how do we do this research about whether or not the earth is flat? And he is sincere and like wants to argue about his stuff. That's not fun. At least Chad's stuff was always fun and frivolous. I could see how that would be annoying to have to do it week after week, but at least it wasn't like mean spirited or just tragically ill-informed or anything down that line.
No, no. At one point it was like Facebook had a poke feature where you poke someone and the queen was on Facebook and they talked about you have to poke the queen. And it was like, oh, do we? No, this is too far. We don't want to go international. We don't want to go royal. Like, I don't want to be in this world. I'm not asking Chad about poking the queen. Like, we're not doing this. Okay. We're not going down that path.
Yeah. You just pretend like you didn't see that. I have a question for you since you're talking about covering the show, the Chad show. What is one thing about your job that a lot of people get wrong? You know, what do you think is the one thing they get wrong the most about what you do?
Then I could get them tickets. That was early on. That was always a thing. It's like I'm coming to town. Can you get me tickets to the game? And I'm like, it doesn't work like that at all. In fact, like I immediately get fired if I try to pull that.
I'm only on this show because I thought you could get me tickets.
Here you are. I got bad news for you. You've locked yourself into a dead wagon. Is that
friends and family hitting you up for tickets, or just like random people on Twitter that think that you're going to get them tickets?
Just anybody. Like, yeah, I would say more friends and family, or like I'm going, like, and I think they know now because I've been doing it long enough. But early on, I mean, that was certainly something that I heard a bunch. People think that I sit in the stands, which a lot, like, oh, so where you sit during, like, where do you go? Are you out in wherever, like what section, whatever? And I'm like, well, there's a press box. There's a whole box like for us to go, and it's whatever. So there's a lot of people that think I sit in the stands. The rooting thing is always part of it, just assuming I'm a fan, which is a weird, like, I'm not going to go into a journalistic wormhole here on rooting versus, you know, just watching and being down the middle, whatever. But like, there's a lot of, because there's so much fan media now, like there's so much of that where everything is like, I'm fan and media. I wear the hat and I have the helmets and I do in the jerseys, and that's like, that world is great. Like, I'm glad that it exists. It's fun. More media is good. Like, more people caring is good. It's great. But like, it's you know, that's not where I'm at, or where the Athletic wants us to be at all. And so I don't, you know, as a kid, I was like, I'm from here. I was a Bengals fan. Like, that's why I fell in love with football. But when I moved back here and kind of got into the job, it's actually easy for me to separate like fan root versus like down the middle, because I feel like I understand both sides so well. Like I feel like I understand the fan side really well, having been around here, and I understand the team side, knowing them well, and I understand like the business and where you're supposed to be. So it makes it easier to kind of find that middle. But yeah, no, I think that's the other thing people think is that I'm like, you know, pissed off when they lose or whatever. You know, I root for me in the city. I root for the city of Cincinnati. I love the city of Cincinnati. I root for the city to feel represented in press conferences, in understanding the team and stuff like that. But I don't root for the team necessarily to win. If that's good for the city, it's good for the city. Like when they went on a Super Bowl run, like that was awesome for the city. And it was cool to see that. But like, you know, there can be a lot of things that are cool for the city, even if they don't win. So but that's a whole nother story.
Even, you know, this is week four for us. And so I haven't spent that much time going through your comments, but even in just 1 month of it, I see a lot of that where people are like, hey, this isn't good for the team, or, you know, you're going to be jinxing us with this or that. Like your role is just supposed to be building up the narratives and, you know, cheering on the Bengals at all points.
That's a real issue that a lot of us face, because, and it's totally fine, but like coaches, and especially a lot of younger ones and players, especially, you know, they're not paid to understand our role. A lot of them, to understand what it, and they think that the idea is that you should be here to support us, to help us. And yeah, there's part of it. We're here to be a voice for whatever needs a voice. But like to like help the team win, is not even at all a part of it. But there is a misunderstanding of that, I think, just from misunderstanding the industry that we see every day, even in the building.
Yeah, I hope we're not counting on you to help the Bengals win football games. Because
like I'm not going to be able to win T-ball games. I don't think I'm going to win flag football games. You're not going to like my playbook. Like, I can't win. I'm not going to win a Madden tournament. I think I could win a cornhole tournament for you. I think I could. If you want to win, if you want somebody to represent the Bengals in a cornhole tournament, that'd be my only angle, I think.
Now, you know, you're talking about all these things you suck at. I do think it's important for us to say, you know, because we're still in this growth phase, if you want to sponsor a tournament, a Growler live show as part of that, and Paul has to compete in a Madden tournament, we can do that, you know, just
love that.
Talk to our business people.
Growler live show / cornhole tournament? I'm in. Let's go.
I think that would be a great event, maybe a great summer event. So, you know, talk to our business people, send us an email. Maybe we can set that up. Cornhole, yeah, you would represent pretty well in that. Madden, probably not as well. All right, looking at your comments from this past week.
All right, let's go. Comments time.
Let me just say too, from the standpoint of, and these are going to be DJ Reader related, because looking at what the Bengals had to do in free agency, they had those two glaring holes, offensive line, defensive line. Those were the big questions. And I know they solved a lot of other problems, you know, the safeties, that's a huge improvement. Getting a super athletic tight end, that's great. A better running back is great. Trent Brown solves that big hole, at least in some fashion, on the offensive line. For DJ Reader, it's still, for the money that he got from Detroit, it still doesn't make sense, you know, because the Bengals still had some money. They have that huge hole. What is it that, you know, they're seeing in Detroit that Cincinnati just didn't want to give him that money? What's your feeling on that?
I think that they are seeing, you know, they're... I think that they feel they don't, first of all, they have other run stoppers where they're not, you know, I think he can be more rotational for them and not have to play as many snaps. And he could do the same thing in Cincinnati, but I think they feel close. They feel like they were willing to spend that. And I know a bunch of people saying, why can't the Bengals do that? I just think they're looking to get younger. I think it was just a weird spot between all sides. I think the Bengals and DJ ended up in a weird space, and it was just felt like time to move on for both sides. And I think the Bengals were just, it wasn't as much something that they're willing to do. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse with the older player thing, but I mean, there's rare exceptions to it. And the injuries and the age, I think, made them a little more wary of that type of an investment. And I think it's one that we'll look back on. We'll see how he plays in Detroit. And if he plays great again, which, you know, because he's a good dude, I hope he does. Wish the best for him and all those guys. They might regret it. But I think that's the decision that they made, and the way it lands and free agency is wild sometimes. Like, it's sometimes you want something that doesn't happen for you. And I think that's maybe part of what happened with DJ.
And you wrote about DJ, and you know, fans had some things to say, some of these comments. So this is from Nate S. Come on, Paul. The melodrama is way overblown here. It almost feels like your personal connection with the player will set the tone of these articles. How do you respond? Is it your relationship?
Well, you call it personal tone, and that's fair. Like, look, the bottom line is the person and how they connect in the locker room is probably the personal tone that you're hearing. Like, the way fans connect with him, the way what he meant to people in the building, that's what I'm reflecting. Okay. I've been obvious. I think DJ is an absolute 5-star human. Okay. I think he's incredible. Does that come across? Maybe it partially comes across because everybody in Cincinnati feels the same way too, and understands that he can have an effect that way. And that's part of the story with him. I mean, he is a core foundational leader guy that matters. So maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Maybe it's too dramatic, but I do feel like of all the decisions, all of them really, I think, clearly made sense one way or the other. Everything that they've done, that was the one that felt really down the middle. That could have gone either way, and that could have a large effect. I mean, it's their biggest positional priority of the offseason, and it went the other way. So am I being over dramatic by saying it? They're one of their biggest issues last year might not get solved, and part of it is letting a fan favorite foundational piece go to Detroit and not spend. Another thing that they get accused of and that fans love to harp on, that's real or not real on him, or not go for it a little more. Am I being over dramatic? Maybe, but I feel like it was the most dramatic moment of the free agency period. So yeah, maybe I leaned into it a bit too much.
Here was the last line of that story. After Thursday, the Bengals are left to wonder if their best bet didn't just take I-75 North, gone forever. Now that is something that Ed took issue with. He said, with all due respect to both Paul and to DJ, the melodramatic last line about championship hopes disappearing up I-75 or whatever is way overhyping. If the Bengals' only hope for a Super Bowl was dependent on a 30-year-old with a significant injury history and a vast amount of tread on the tires from the punishment nose tackle takes on every play, well, that's just saying hope was slim to begin with.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, it's a good line. Okay.
It is a good line. How'd you feel when you wrote that line?
And the bottom line is, I'm saying, is that their best? Was that their best bet to stop the run? And did that just leave? Was he a better hope to stop the run than anything that currently exists on the free agent market or in the draft? Was he? He might have been. And it might have been an uncomfortable number. And there was risk. There's risk in all of it. That was the headline of the story, I believe. Is that they have put themselves into a corner in terms of making sure they can stop the run by not having somebody like DJ Reader. And do they need to have that? I don't know. There's risk in all of it, but there's a chance at the very least that was their best hope. So maybe it was slim and none, but I'm just saying, I do think there's a chance that was the best bet for them at that particular position at stopping the run. And it is gone now. That's the risk that they have to wonder about. That's what we'll wonder about, and that's what we'll assess as you get to the season. So again, yes, I'm a drama queen this week. I got drama stirred up because I talked about the Dax Hill trade possibility that got people all riled up.
Yeah, you were the first
I'm
one
dramatic
to introduce
with the DJ Reader thing. I've just got drama. I'm just the drama king this week, I guess.
But the Dax Hill thing, I mean, right now, if you look at the Bengals roster, you can easily see a scenario where he's not getting on the field a ton. You've got some guys that can play safety. You've got young players there that you like. You know, they're probably going to still get another cornerback, whether it's early in the draft or a late free agency signing. So it's not like he's got that desperate need there. Maybe he backs up Mike Hilton this season, but there is a real path to him not playing much. So why was the trade thing so controversial on Twitter? I saw you take some flack from that. I know you don't read the tweets, but I read some of them and some people were coming at you for even introducing that idea. But he is a first round pick. He's a super athletic player. He is a talented football player. I don't think that's unreasonable to expect that he could be a valuable trade asset on a different team.
I don't think that you would be talking about trading him if you didn't have a major deficiency somewhere else. Like,
right.
You just got to look at where you have surplus and where you have deficiency. That's all it is. It's strictly a look, we have this guy who is real value, like that teams would want. And we have this other area where we have something that we need and don't have and don't really know where it's coming from. Why can't those two things possibly work together? It's not quitting on a guy. It's not saying that he doesn't have, it's the fact that he does have value, that he is good, that he is young, is part of why you would even consider it. Does that maybe make you better? You're talking about the next two seasons. What makes you better this year and next year? Having Dax Hill at that price, or having somebody that you could trade for, or a pick that you could acquire, or whatever, at a position like defensive tackle. That's all. You have to, after free agency, you have to sit down and reassess where are we at. Okay. And to me, that was part of the reassessment. Not that you would do it, but when you're weighing out the options to fix the problems that are still in front of you, you know, that's something that you at least bring up. Should we? Can we? Maybe the answer is quickly, no, not doing it. The end. But it at least is brought up because of just the pluses and minuses of your roster construction.
Yeah, and if they had signed Tart or some other player, then maybe, yeah, you're not necessarily having the same conversation. But the fact that there is still a pretty big need there, like, I don't, you know, you're going to have to probably get a little more creative to solve that because the draft doesn't have a lot of players that fit that profile either. So it's not as simple as like, yeah, we'll just take this guy round one and take an offensive tackle round two and then kind of go from there. So yeah, I thought that part was, you know, if people want to come at you for your melodramatic lines and your writing flair, then sure, you know, they can take their shots. You know, it's a craft.
Look, maybe last week I was told more pros, less charts. I give you more pros. I give you the drama and I'm too dramatic.
Yeah.
What do I need to do?
Don't take the wrong lessons here. Don't go back to the charts, Paul. You know, you just worry. Stay with the melodramatic Read lines.
Read Monday. Great.
It is Hude Light. You know, we're supposed to be lighter on the Fridays. Are you ready to shift gears a little bit?
Let's go. I feel like we've had a nice mix so far. So let's rock. Let's rock a little lighter here.
So I've got, before I dive into the comedy world, I did want to mention, I've got shows to plug. April 6th, the Commonwealth Sanctuary. That's the next big tri-state show that I'm doing. Then I'll be at the, St. Charles Funny Bone, April 11th through the 14th, Dayton Funny Bone, April 19th and 20th. And then, in Lexington, Kentucky at a theater, April 26th. So if you live in any of those cities, I'm going to work on adding Zimbabwe to the touring schedule. Maybe get out to Japan so they can see somebody from the number one new football podcast in Japan. But yeah, those are shows to check out. And I did want to mention this. I had a guy at a show last week who was, you know, younger than both of us. I think he was early 30s and revealed himself to be a huge local TV viewer. Have you watched, when's the last time you watched local TV news? Is that a part of your media consumption habits?
Oh yeah. I've always loved local news, not for the news, for the comedy. I'm a big, big comedy, local news guy, just because I love the more frivolous the story that local news has decided to cover, the better, like what they choose and like why they're always going live from like the darkness in the middle of nowhere to show that they were there. Like everything about it. It's like, what's the most obscure live location? You know, that you develop backstories that you totally make up about the local reporters and their personalities. I'm all about it.
What's your go-to channel? What's your favorite?
Well, now
I go on the record. There's you have to burn some two, media bridges.
Fox 19. For two reasons. One, love Fox 19. Joe and Jeremy to me are the best in the business at, in sports. And so I love any, I want to see everything that they do. They're my guys. Love Joe and Jeremy, Fox 19 Sports, number one, but the rest of it, they are on so much. Like Fox 19 has news on like almost 24 hours a day. And so much of it is local. So you get all kinds of weird stuff. They're pulling from that weird video of a squirrel fighting a rat in California that you'll just get some, we found this video that they start so many segments. Have you seen this? And like, they'll just, you just never, cause they have so much time to fill. You get more of the weird and not as much of the like local hard news. So, and that's what I'm there for. So Fox 19 is our go-to.
Yeah, they do a great job with sports. I'm a big Channel 12 guy when it comes to like the morning TV. Like whenever I have to do the media rounds to plug local shows, I've always had the most fun on there. And this guy at the show, he was a big Channel 12 fan, right? But he was with a girl that they've only been together for 2 months. And he's like raving about how much he loves Channel 12. I'm like, oh, you're going to end this relationship. Like she's going to find out you're this freaky morning news TV junkie. And he said, well, you need to have something for the morning after. That's your go-to morning after move? Like they hooked up for the first time. He's like, all right, here's Bob Herzog. Now I get to share you that part of my life. Now that we want to do what we did last night again, I'll really treat you. I'm really going to show you a good time. You don't get breakfast. You don't get the donuts in the suite like you're coming to the Bengals as a free agent with Joe Burrow. But you are going to get Bob Herzog. That's what I'm going to give you the morning after.
That's the last, that's option D on the Burrow run passer boot. That's breakfast at Channel 12 with Bob Herzog, is the worst part of a free agent's entry period. You don't want that. That's amazing. I, what would it be? I mean, what is it? Good Morning America? Like what's the softest morning TV entry point? Is it just SportsCenter? Is it like
a Sports Center or
maybe just some 90s music videos? Like, let's just put on 90s music.
Yeah, but if you go super specific, like, oh, we're turning on Channel 12. Wake up, babe. You got to see this. I mean, that's just a recipe for disaster. But next time I see Bob, I think he would like to hear that. Like, he is some young guy's morning after move, which is just probably the first time that's ever happened to him in his career, right? How would you feel if somebody tells us next week, like, yeah, my morning after move is to turn on the Growler podcast and show her, you know, my favorite Bengals, podcast crew.
That would make me very uncomfortable. But that's what I heard happens in Turks and Caicos. That's how we got on there. I believe that's our one listener. It was just looking for something really calm and soothing morning after.
Yeah, we're going to fly you to a tropical spot and then still give you a taste of home.
And then throw on the growler. That's right. There you go.
That is fantastic. This weekend, I'm working on a joke too, and I wanted to run this by you. I think, so a lot of people bash old people for not understanding technology, right? Like that's a common thing. And my standpoint's a little bit different on this. I think it's unfair that we expect old people to understand all this tech. Right. And you can start to see it. Like, I know you can teach an old dog new tricks. From my standpoint, I do think it is fun to watch the old dogs teach the tricks to themselves. You know, you get that older relative that is start signing Facebook comments like it's a birthday card. You know, they'll comment under like the family photo, like cute photo, love Uncle Bob. And you're like, that's not how this works. My wife's grandmother responded to a picture that she posted, family photo. And so it's just dozens of like, cute pic, kids look cute, blah, blah, blah. And my wife's grandma just responded with a GIF, which I didn't know she knew how to do that, first of all. And it was just of a small Asian boy crying. And I just want to know what she thought she was doing. I would watch an hour-long documentary just about how that happened, what she thought she was doing, how that actually came to pass. But I think it's cruel that we expect them to understand this stuff and learn this stuff. Here's the meanest part is when they took all the soap operas and they put them on streaming, she's watched Days of Her Lives almost for all of hers. And then they put it on Peacock. That just seems cruel.
Yes.
The logo for the show is an hourglass. You can't put that on a streaming platform. They're not
going to needs to go that. On rabbit ears only. Okay. Yeah. That's where it belongs. Okay.
You're in your 80s. You don't need to learn how to install a new app and set all that up. That's just mean. That's just cruel.
Yeah. I love it. How do I get Peacock? Peacock, everybody knows the retirement homes, they subscribe. They've got it. They've got it for you. They know you need it.
Yeah. And I'm sure that like you've got old people in your life where you started to notice like the tech stuff becomes an issue. If you want to use Wi-Fi at your parents' house, it's like you got to find the little slip of paper that it's written on. And, you know, that's where you get the password and all that stuff. It can be a problem.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up here with some dad life. Let's each pick one bit of dad life from this week. What do you got going on?
So for me, we are, my middle child, she's a big athlete, but she's a gymnast, right? And she is only in second grade and is suffering from a growth plate gymnastics related injury called gymnast wrist. So already as a Bengals fan, I'm monitoring one major wrist injury. So now I've got two wrist injuries in my life. And this is like, I've always been a big, you know, sports person. You know, I played sports as a kid, but I've never been in the gymnastics world before. And it's one of those things where it's like you want your kids to be happy, but I don't know if you want them to be too good at gymnastics, because that just can overtake your entire life. You know, to be an elite gymnast, you're like homeschooling because you have to train 6-7 hours a day. She's eight. She does 6 or 7 hours in the gym already, and then stuff on her own. And now we have to add physical therapy to this too. So she has to go late to school once a week because she has physical therapy appointments to work on the wrist and strengthen the wrist so she can compete. We're having to manage her workload of like, all right, she can skip this practice, but a competition's coming up. So we got to make sure she gets her reps and practices her routines. It is a nightmare. This is way more than I thought gymnastics would be.
I don't think Burrow spends that much time dealing with his wrist rehab at this point. Like I think you might have him top. And if you run into Joe anywhere, I mean, I think you open with that, be like, let's talk about wrist rehab. It's my life right now. I feel like we're very, you know, good friends at this. We're joined at the hip on this one.
That's, like, hey, Joe, that's how are you doing with the uneven bars lately? Is that still a problem for you?
He's like, you know what? I've actually been trying out gymnastics as a way to get myself stronger. Lots of pommel horse, lots of rings, you know, that type of stuff.
That would be amazing if that's what he hits us with in training camp. It's just him on a balance beam, just nailing cartwheels.
It's like, you know, when offensive linemen started doing yoga and everybody would do those stories. Here's a big man doing yoga. Here's Joe Burrow on the pommel horse. That's what I want to see.
That'd be incredible. What's new in your dad world?
I've got one that's just been just making me laugh so hard. So I, you know, as a child of, I mentioned the local news and being from Cincinnati, like I've always been a fan of just like the local jingle that just lives in your head for the duration of your life that you just never get rid of. Like, it is impossible for me to go to anything that an event or any meet anyone in Milford and say, I'm going to Milford for this. It is in Milford, and anyone from Cincinnati that grew up knows that that is how that commercial ended. And that's exact. And that is just like the line. So I love, it's just a part, or really the most famous one. The Reds are on the radio. Like, remember that went away for 1 year, and there was so much outrage that they had to bring the guy back and bring it back the next year. Like, you will not take this from us. So I have this very strong connection to just like commercials and jingles and whatever. Well, my daughter has fallen in love with the Blake Maislin billboards and the commercials.
Oh no.
And so anytime we go anywhere and there's a Blake Maislin billboard, she just goes 4-4-4-4-4-4. 4-4-4-4, call Blake Maislin. Like, every single time we see one. So no matter where we are, what time of day, what's happening, stings it every single time, including certain routes to places that we go, that there it is. Wednesdays on the way to dance. Guess what? I'm getting the Maislin jingle. And I'm just never been prouder. I've never been prouder. Like, this is going to be it. This is going to be hers. You know, this is going to be special. On a side note, I hosted back in the day the 50 West Punch, the Punch Out event, where they would have real boxing fights at 50 West, and for the release of Punch You in the IPA. It was a huge deal, and I got to be the host. One of my favorite things ever. They did like five of them. They don't do them anymore because they don't need to like have gimmicks to bring people out there anymore. But it was incredible. 1 year, Blake Maislin was a guest judge. And so introducing the guest judges, I was just like, you know, everyone's there. They're drunk off double IPA, and it's a pretty rowdy crowd. And I'm like, you know him, Blake Maislin. And I started saying the jingle four, and I didn't get the second four out. And it was the loudest the crowd was all night in unison, cheering his jingle. I'm like, this dude has done it. Okay. He has created something that just everyone remembers and will not let go. So kudos to him. And he's now infiltrated my family.
That is amazing. Like I get, all right. So the audience at the boxing event, sure, it's going to sound like a Jimmy Buffett concert. You know, they're going to sing along with the jingle. The fact that it's permeated the youth, that is shocking to me. You know, a lot of little girls like Bluey or Elsa, and then your daughter just wants to meet Blake Maislin. Like that's incredible to me that he could just overtake that spot, you know, and you know, maybe he'll have a Blake Maislin on ice that you have to go to. That'll replace your Disney on ice budget. Next year is just seeing.
We'll be there. Look, if Blake, if you need a new promo, my daughter singing it is quite cute, and you can get even stronger with the youth of Cincinnati if you.
And you get the youth, you're going to get the parents too. So now the whole family's got to go to lawyer. This is an avenue he needs to pursue and really start putting some of that marketing energy down there.
Kids get them and their families into some predicaments that require lawyers. And I feel like that's a really good place to go. Start them young. It's like the old cigarette companies. They knew what they were doing. Philip Morris knew what they were doing.
Exactly. And I think, man, your daughter's teachers, they're going to have to be on their toes too. Like anyone around your kid is going to have to take extra care because she has a go-to attorney and not many kids walk around with that knowledge. You know, most of them don't even know what a lawyer is, let alone how to contact one.
I'm not going to address this C in art until I have my lawyer present. I'm going to call him right now at 4.
Can I borrow your phone, Mrs. Johnson? I need to call my attorney.
That's it. All right, Mark, good stuff.
It was another fun episode.
Another great Friday. I hope this has gotten people's Friday kicked off in a good direction and that you aren't sad from your new promo bets that you lost on whatever gambling site that you got some free money on and lost it all on day one and rebuying into survivor pools or whatever you're doing here. I hope it goes well for you and you enjoy this weekend. You know, it's a fun one. So we'll be back on Monday. Mike Renner on Monday on Balds Don't Lie, although he has a beautiful head of hair. So he won't know anything about my plight, but it'll be great. All right. And make sure you go see Mark, put Mark's stuff on your calendar out and about. Go check his show out. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Talk to you next time. Have a good one.